Although some people outside of higher ed would say it's been a year and a half. Come on, faculty. When are they supposed to learn? When do they have the time to redesign their courses and their assessments? They don't get paid in the summer, a lot of them. Our adjunct faculty only get paid the first day of class and it ends on the last day of class, and that's probably a lot of language instructors. They're not getting the training support and time they need to tool up or to skill up.
You're listening to Speaking of Language, a podcast recorded at the Language Resource Center at Cornell University. Each week, we explore a topic related to language pedagogy and second language acquisition. This week, on Speaking of Language,
Dr. Tricia Bertram-Gallant discusses the impact of generative AI tools on academic integrity in the language classroom and beyond.
Welcome to a new episode of Speaking of Language. I'm Angelica Kramer, the director of the Language Resource Center at Cornell University.
And I'm Sam Lupowitz, the LRC's media manager. Dr. Tricia Bertram-Gallant is joining us today from UC San Diego to talk about academic integrity in relation to artificial intelligence. Welcome to Speaking of Language, Tricia.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So what we would like to start with is, have you introduced yourself for our listeners and share a little bit more information about your own path and your background with languages?
Well, I am a Canadian born and raised, so spent 30 years of my life in Canada, in Ontario. Mm-hmm. And so I took French, of course, like any good Canadian or any good Anglophone, from probably grade 1 or 2 through grade 12. I also even lived within a French community, a French-speaking community. Unfortunately, as you know how school teaches languages sometimes, you learn how to read and write it pretty well, but not necessarily to converse out in the wild. And unfortunately, back in the 70s, 80s, when I was a student, there was a little bit of rift between the English and the French. And so the French Canadians in our area would not speak French with English-speaking folks. And so I never really got very good at speaking French. And then I moved to San Diego. I spent 11 years professionally in higher education at the University of Guelph, where I did my bachelor in Guelph, Ontario, Canada, where I did my bachelor's and master's, and in psychology and in education, specifically adult education, worked in career services and cooperative education, and then moved to San Diego in 2000 to start my PhD in higher education and leadership. And I thought, okay, I'm going to learn Spanish because I understood that maybe if you grew up learning French, that maybe learning Spanish wouldn't be too difficult. Yeah. And of course, that kept getting delayed. And I thought, once I finish my PhD, I'm going to learn Spanish. Even started the Duolingo thing and tried that for a bit, and of course have dropped it again. I do have a fear of speaking other languages because of getting laughed at when I was a kid when I tried to speak in another language. So I haven't quite gotten over that phobia.
But shame.
Yeah, it is a shame. It's one of my great regrets that I didn't get a French immersion when I had the opportunity. Since graduating with my PhD, I have been working at UC San Diego. It was the first academic integrity position available at UC San Diego and really in much of the United States and Canada. And it's just kept growing and expanding. And I have been here ever since. So I'm now 17 and a half years professionally in academic integrity and about 21 years researching and writing about it.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
Terrific. Everybody has heard at this point about ChatGPT, Gemini, Claude, Copilot, Perplexity, the list goes on and on. So how would you summarize threats and opportunities that generative AI poses for language instruction in particular?
Yeah. Well, this is the big question, not just, I think, for language instruction, but writing instruction. I think they're in the same camp. Mm-hmm. If you think about Star Trek and the Universal Translator, where you do not have to speak the language of the the society that you're encountering, which would be impossible to do given the numbers of societies that they've encountered, they portray that language translator as basically perfect. There was few times, few episodes where there was a kind of lost in translation moment.
Darmok.
We do already have universal translator-like devices that they're inventing, and their little pins that they're saying people can wear. And the translation, mind you, is way better now than it was even 2 years ago.
Sure.
However, like what I think gets lost in a broader contextual translation is when you can't speak or understand the language of the person you're engaging with, do you really understand the can you really understand the culture? Can you really understand the behaviors, the norms, the values, when it's just a straight language translation rather than a way in which you can engage with that culture natively with that language? And so I think the question is, what is language instruction going forward? Same with what is writing instruction. So writing instructors will say, but people need to write to think. And I'm like, well, not always. People have thought through pictures, through visualizations, through music. And I think that's a very Western notion of thinking. And so I wonder the same for languages. Now, I'm not a language expert, right? I've already disclosed that. But when we're teaching languages, will we still teach things like grammar and those kinds of technicalities of language? Or will we use Gen AI in a way that helps with those basic features of language teaching so that we can focus when our students are in the classroom with us, we can focus more on that interaction, more on that conversation, and less on the rote memorization of grammar. I don't know. Like I said, I'm not a language expert. I'm also not really an artificial intelligence expert either. But I definitely see opportunities for all types of instruction, including language, where could we free up some of the stuff that faculty currently have to do with and for students so that there's more direct human-to-human engagement, which is really why students need to come to at least in-person physical colleges and universities. They don't need to come to us for that low-level stuff, for information retrieval, for technical corrections. And so the threat, though, of course, in the meantime, is that students can easily cheat with these tools.
Right.
So if your language of class includes assigning an essay for someone to write in the language of instruction, they can easily just write it in their comfortable language and use a translator and submit it that way. Mm-hmm. Even presentations. If you do a recorded presentation, because you're teaching an online asynchronous class and the student has to record a presentation, that can be a total deep fake. The script can be written by an AI. The video can be AI. The audio can be AI. And it could look like the person giving the presentation. So obviously, in this interim, while we're transitioning, there are a lot of threats, but I think the future is full of opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So in your work and research, what have you found so far about students' thoughts about Gen AI and about, you know, is this considered cheating and how they're applying, these models and these bots?
So we did a survey. We just put posters up around campus, and we just said, is it cheating to use ChatGPT? And gave them a QR code, and we've had 3,337 responses. Now, I can't guarantee that they're all from students, but my guess is they are mostly. And the majority of them get it right. The majority of them say sometimes it's cheating to use ChatGPT. Unfortunately, a very large percentage get it wrong, where they say about 33% say it's never cheating to use ChatGPT for schoolwork. So that's a little worrisome. And, and then, of course, there's a whole other percentage that say, so I think it was 60-some percent say it's okay sometimes, and about 30% say it's always okay, and then a few that say it's always wrong, which is also incorrect. And what I'm finding was, so the ones that say sometimes are totally correct. what I'm finding with students, and I've been meeting with all the students who have been reported for misuse of Gen AI in their schoolwork. So I've met with about 110 or counting students. Yeah. And the majority of them, when I'm talking to them or doing presentations in classes, they're confused. They're not thinking. To me, it's pretty simple. Did your professor say you can use it? If they're silent on it, you should assume that you can't. And if you really want to think about it, what is the learning objective for that assessment? So if the learning objective is, can you write in Japanese, then obviously using ChatGPT to write your paper in Japanese would be cheating. But if it's a chemistry class and they just want to know your chemistry knowledge, is it okay to write in Japanese if that's my comfortable language and have ChatGPT translate it to English? That's where we start to get a little bit unsure. Is that that's a little bit of a gray area, because right now people expect university graduates to graduate being able to communicate in orally and in writing in the language of instruction for that university at this point in time. I'm wondering if that's going to change. Who cares if a chemist, if translation services get as good as we think they're going to get, who cares if a brilliant chemist can write a journal article in English? Why not let them write it in Chinese and then have the editors or the journal, for if they want to do quality control, have a tool do the translation for them? So there's just a lot of confusion. Students aren't sure. And of course, there's always some students who are going to say, yay, because students are humans. There's going to be students who say, yay, I can cheat, you know, my way through all my classes. that's a small minority of any students at any college or university, but there are some. And there are some who will never touch it because they're scared to death of accidentally cheating. And then there's a whole bunch in the middle that are saying, I want to use it, but I'm not sure how I'm allowed. And so it's complicated.
Oh yeah, without a doubt.
What are some ways that generative AI can and should or should not be used? And what are the faculty perceptions around academic integrity there?
Well, I think Gen AI can be used to amplify learning and shouldn't be used if it's going to hinder learning. So it always goes back to the learning objectives, right? What are the learning objectives for this particular course and this particular assessment? So every assessment should be tied to at least one learning objective. And if Gen AI will amplify it, then maybe we should use it. So, for example, we don't assess for spelling, grammar, and reference formatting anymore. I remember in the 80s, you know, 90s, when I was in school, before the internet, we lost points if I was a psych major, we lost points if our references were not in APA format. Who cares if the title of the article or the title of the journal is italicized?
I care. I mean, personally, I love APA, and I see things. It's problematic, but I totally agree with you. Absolutely.
As long as the machine does it. Like, that's not the ethics part of citing, right? The ethics part of citing is acknowledging where your ideas came from, not which is italicized and which isn't. And so we don't assess for those things anymore. They're not learning objectives, at least not the college university level.
Yeah.
And so we have to, we have to think about the learning objectives, the learning outcomes, and also the assessment purpose when we're trying to decide should students be allowed to use Gen AI or not. If the assessment purpose is for learning rather than of learning, then perhaps Gen AI can be used. But if the assessment is of learning, I need to know whether Angelica can do X, Y, and Z, then we want to know that you can do it without Gen AI, then obviously that use would be inappropriate. And of course, faculty perspectives are all over the map, just like student perspectives are, right? Some are incorporating it into their classes. Some are allowing Gen AI use with acknowledgement and transparency. Some are still trying to ban it. And it's okay to ban it on some things if need be, as long as you're putting mechanisms in place to secure those assessments and you're not banning it and then giving a take-home essay. That's not going to work. And so faculty are just as confused and unsure. Most faculty are just as confused and uncertain as the students are. And although some people outside of higher ed would say it's been a year and a half, come on, faculty, Mm-hmm. When are they supposed to learn?
Right.
Yep. When do they have the time to redesign their courses and their assessments? Right. They don't get paid in the summer, a lot of them. Our adjunct faculty or contingent faculty only get paid the first day of class, and it ends on the last day of class, and that's probably a lot of language instructors. Yep. So they're not getting the training support and time they need to tool up or to skill up.
What are some recommendations for talking with our students then about Gen AI and I more generally, if we want to maybe alleviate some of the confusion that does exist among students? Where do we start with that? What can we do?
I think all instructors, language or otherwise, but particularly in language, because Gen AI is so powerfully poised to undermine the learning objectives of what you're trying to reach in your language classes, you have to have an open and transparent conversation. You can't just pretend it's not there. Yeah. And frankly, I mean, this was happening before Gen AI, that a lot of instructors were pretending that cheating wasn't happening, that contract cheating wasn't happening, that students weren't copying from other students or previously submitted assignments. So,
of course,
my advice for talking with students has not really changed that much. Mm-hmm. You should, one of my favorite activities, and I've done it with my own students when I teach, is you have a statement of values. So the International Center for Academic Integrity has six fundamental values. They say academic integrity is the courage to uphold honesty, fairness, respect, responsibility, and trustworthiness, even when it's difficult to do so, or even when you're tempted not to. And so if you have a class and you can spend 20 minutes of a class talking about, and you could even give this to them ahead of time, but you have these values, say on a chart or a table, you have them on the left-hand column, and then you have, what does that mean for students in this class? And what does that mean for the instructional team? So this isn't just about the students upholding those values. It's the instructional team upholding those values as well. And if you ask them particularly to think about in general, but also with Gen AI use, the students will come up with the same boundaries, the same parameters as you would as an instructor and lecture at them. So when the students come up with it themselves and they hear it from the other students saying, oh, well, we shouldn't use ChatGPT to do X because that would be cheating, or we should come prepared having practice or read or whatever it was to class, the students are more likely to align with their peers than with the prohibitions or the prescriptions of the faculty members. So that can be a very powerful conversation, and then you can revisit it. How's that midterm? How's that going? Do we need to adjust anything? Do you feel like it's being upheld? And then specifically with Gen AI, be very clear on what your policy is. And if you are allowing use, whether conditionally on some assignments or in some ways, or fully allowing, that you require students to be transparent about it, just like we cite all of our other sources, right? Did you use it? Which tool did you use? How did you use it? How did it help or hinder your learning? We want to build their meta awareness, their critical thinking, their, some might say, AI literacy about this. Did it help or hinder your learning? Would you use it differently next time? Mm-hmm. And share with me your chat history.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nice.
So that is really powerful, both because it helps the students develop meta-awareness, but it also helps the instructor see a student's process. And if they see 50% of their class really engaging in the learning in a process that is not helpful, they can provide advice and make corrections. And if you're going to ban it, you've got to secure the assessments. You can't just don't ban it and then, you know, like I said, still give those out-of-class written essays as assignments. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Can you talk a bit more about detecting integrity violations with Gen AI? What should educators look for?
You want me to give away the secrets?
Yes.
If you don't, we'll just ask ChatGPT what.
There we go. We should do that anyway.
It'll give you some pretty good answers, actually.
I believe it.
Yeah. So I had a visiting scholar with me for the month of January from Chile. So native Spanish speaker, obviously. And she hadn't realized yet that I think it's only if you have ChatGPT 4, the paid version, that you can have an app on your phone where you can converse with it. Mm-hmm. And so I had her converse with it in Spanish because I was curious, is it as good at conversing in non-English languages as it is in English? Now, that's still a Roman, you know, still a Latin mm-hmm. language, so it's not like I asked you for Chinese or Japanese
sure.
or something.
Right.
But she said it was great. So if the tools are as good in that language that you're teaching, and I don't know if it is as good in all of the languages that might be being taught, then I would think that the ways to detect would be similar as they are in English.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just going to have to go with that because that's all I know from an English perspective. So typical things that are still popping up, and by still, I mean at 9:29 a.m. California time on Friday, March 15th, 2024, just in case someone's listening to this later, and it has gotten better at this since I spoke, which, yeah. and by later, I mean, you know, 2 days from now.
Yeah.
It still is not very good at sticking with the prompt in the sense of, it will use non-class sources. So if mm-hmm. it's a paper where you're supposed to be drawing in class sources, you know, course readings, it will do so in a superficial way, or it will just use other sources if you didn't tell it what the course sources were, of course. It will still stay at a very superficial level. The problem is, so do novice learners. So that's challenging. And it still will be perfect, right? However, if I'm smart, I can prompt it to not do it perfectly. I can say, please write this response right. as someone taking a Japanese language course for the first time mm-hmm. at college level. So, and as a native English speaker, for example. So the more specific the prompt is, the better the output's going to be. So there's going to be little red flags that might alert the professor. In language classes, it could be, wow, this is way better than the writing I've seen them do in class, or this is way better than their oral. Now, again, I would argue, as someone who experienced this, writing an oral facility in language don't always match up. Lots of times you can be way better at one than the other. So that's not always a good comparison either. So really, you're going to read something, and only that person with that disciplinary knowledge is really going to be mm-hmm. able to detect any kind of flags. And then the only way to really assess is having a conversation with the student. Mm-hmm. Can they talk about what they wrote? Can they talk about their word choices? Can they define the words that they chose? Can they talk about the readings that were in there? Can they talk about their thesis or their main point or their conclusion? That's the only way to really assess whether a student wrote, if we're talking mm-hmm. about writing, wrote something themselves. I think it's going to be complicated for language instructors, mm-hmm. really.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. You mentioned the colleague who was talking with ChatGPT-4 in Spanish. I played around with it myself in German. And it was wild to me how inconsistent the bot was in its own pronunciation. I kept asking the same prompt over and over, partially because I was trying to capture something for a conference presentation in case we wouldn't have internet. And so I kept asking the same question. And every single time, especially the way that the initialism of AI in German, KI, so it is an initialism just like in English, right? It's not I or ki. Mm-hmm. But a couple of times, ChatGPT-4 would tell me in German, "Ki ist eine tolle Technologie," and I'm like, "What?" So I was surprised that happened, because you would think at least there would be consistency in pronunciation. But
yeah, you would think so. I mean, with different dialects in every language, it's not easy. And I haven't read about how they're training it in actual oral communication.
Yeah.
And is it being trained on thousands of different dialects of German or regional, if you think about regions and how we pronounce words differently, or are they training it on the textbook? Right. So if I compare Parisian French with Quebecois French, or traditional French, or Scottish English versus
American English,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's interesting. I think it'll be fascinating to see mm-hmm. how this develops, as you said, in 2 days or even in 2 years.
Right. And may I add, some people would answer your question about detection with you shouldn't bother trying to detect. I have found on social media, I belong to way too many Facebook groups on artificial intelligence and education, too many LinkedIns, all that sort mm-hmm. of thing. And I'm finding a very polar, just like in America mm-hmm. right now, very extreme polarization, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I saw one person in a social media forum ask, hey, how do I detect? It was a very good question. It was very, like, I think they're a high school or elementary school teacher. And they got piled on.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Vitriol. It was really disturbing to me mm-hmm. as a member of a community where we're just supposed to be helping each other out.
Yeah.
And I would say to those who say we shouldn't bother detecting, I say, I'm not yet there because for democracy purposes, let alone schooling purposes, I think we need to be able to tell when something is artificially generated.
Yeah.
Now, the people that say we shouldn't is because as it's getting integrated more and more, like Microsoft's Copilot, that's going to be harder and harder to do.
Yeah.
But I'm still holding out hope. The other reason people would say don't bother detecting is if you're banning it, you shouldn't give students an opportunity to use it like an out-of-class assessment. And that I am more in line with. If you don't want students to use it, if it would undermine the learning, the assessment of their learning, then you must do a secure in class, unfortunately, proctored mm-hmm. assessment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No. Great. So what would be the first thing for our colleagues that they can start with tomorrow if they want to integrate Gen AI in their classroom and they want to do it ethically? What would be the one recommendation that you have? Where do they start?
Well, I would say playing with it until you add a do it ethically. Because the tools themselves have ethical issues with them. Mm-hmm. The environmental costs of the servers that are needed to cool these data centers, the water being used is astronomically dangerous for our society. The ways in which they did not pay people for the data that they took to train their machines on, the fact that they paid Kenyans $2 an hour to train their data. So some would argue you can't use them ethically at all because they weren't ethically developed and they're not ethical tools.
Sure.
Let's bracket that aside and say you don't buy that argument. The one thing you should do is play with it. You should be putting your current assessments in there. You should be seeing how it responds, both the oral for languages, both the oral app and the written possibilities. You should be asking it to help you revise your learning objectives, revise your assessment prompts, think through what you could be doing differently. But really, the first piece of advice is just you have to play with it. You can't read to understand it, it's one of those experiential learning moments. you have to learn it through doing.
Yep.
Great. Tricia, I know we really appreciate you sharing all of these thoughts and your expertise with us. Where can our listeners find out more about you and about your work?
Well, I'd like to say a personal website, but I let that get defunct a long time ago because who has time to keep that up? So you can go to integrity.ucsd.edu. So our UC San Diego website. Not only will you find information about me and about what we're telling our own community about artificial intelligence, but you'll find just lots of other great information about academic integrity. I think my CV is also linked from there so that you can see things I've written, or you can just Google Scholar me is an easy way, or Amazon me, and that's an easy way to find some of all of my Amazon will have all of my books.
Great. Wonderful. Well, as Sam was just saying, we really do appreciate you taking the time and shedding some light on the important considerations here that we all need to keep in mind as this whole field is developing. Before we let you go, though, we'd like to ask you to share a word in a language that you speak, you love, you are learning, you may want to learn, that doesn't exist in English as one word, but that you wish it did?
Well, considering we're at the end of our time together, I'll just say adios, which circles us all the way back to the beginning where I said I've still got a goal to learn some Spanish. I've got Spanish-speaking folks in my office. I could practice. I really don't have any excuse other than phobia. So if I could say I should go to a therapist for my language phobia in Spanish, I would say that. But I can't, so I will just say adios and gracias.
I like it.
Fantastic. Well, this has been great. Thank you so much for speaking of language with us, Tricia.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Next week, we will hear from our most recent LRC Speaker Series presenter, Dr. Jeff Bale, about language policy, anti-racism, and change. You can catch his talk live on Monday, March 25th, or wait until next week's episode, or maybe simply do both.
Until then.
Auf Wiederhören.
The Language Resource Center is located on the ground floor of Stimson Hall on Cornell's main campus in Ithaca, New York. Check us out on the web at lrc.cornell.edu.
And follow Cornell LRC on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
Speaking of Language is produced by Angelica Kramer and Sam Lupowitz.
Recorded by Sam Lupowitz.
Original music by Sam Lupowitz, Dan Gable, and Joe Gibson.
Thanks also to the College of Arts and Sciences at Cornell University.
As a reminder, the ideas and opinions expressed on this podcast do not reflect those of the College of Arts and Sciences or any other official entity of Cornell University.
We thank our listeners, and do stay tuned for our next episode.